Jesus, right? Kind of the purpose, that's why we're here. We're here to talk about Jesus. We've been talking about Jesus for a long time. The theme for this year is face-to-face with God. So what does it mean to have experiences where you encounter the living God? What does it mean to know who God is? Okay. If you grew up in the church, especially in the 90s, you heard a lot of Jesus is the answer. You heard a lot of what would Jesus do? You probably grew up listening to Jesus Freak by DC Talk. Jesus is a name we hear, we shout. It's a name with power. But who exactly was Jesus? Who exactly is Jesus? Because we believe we serve a living God, right? So as Phil's been talking the last few weeks, we talked about the resurrection of Jesus. We talked about how Jesus loves, how Jesus brings joy. We know that Jesus healed. We know that Jesus loved. We know that Jesus brought hope to people around him. We know that Jesus upended the social order of his time by lifting up the poor and the outcast. We know that Jesus spoke truth to the powerful, oftentimes uncomfortably. We know that Jesus made a lot of people mad. We know that Jesus made a lot of people rejoice. We know that Jesus honored those around him. We know that Jesus gave voice to the voiceless. And we know that he invited people to join him. From the very beginning of Jesus' ministry, he said, "Come with me. Leave the nets on the boat and follow me. Walk away from the tax collecting booth and join me in my ministry." So we know a lot about what Jesus did. Okay. And we know, Josh, if you go to the next slide. In John, we're going to spend a lot of time in John today. John tells us a few things about Jesus. Okay. At the very beginning of John 1, we hear, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him nothing was made that was made." So John, from the very beginning, unequivocally, very clearly says, Jesus is God. Jesus was with God. Jesus was one with God. Jesus was in the beginning. Jesus created all things. Jesus was one with the Creator. And this concept that Jesus is God is, in my mind, easy to understand, right? Because you see Jesus working miracles as he walked the earth. We see him speaking in ways that seemed unexplainable to people. We see him doing things that amazed. We see him rising from the dead in a way no one has ever done before or since. And so this idea that Jesus was God is a little easier to understand. Like, okay, so God came and walked on earth. Okay, if you're a fantasy buff, there's all kinds of stories about God's coming and walking the earth. It's a trope that's in, you know, it's normal, right? Not normal, right? But like, it makes a little bit more sense to our minds. But let's move down to John, what verse is that? Sorry, 1:14, where it says, "The Word became flesh, and the Word dwelt among them." Okay. So here we see John saying that not only was Jesus God, right, but Jesus was human. Jesus lived as a human. Jesus became flesh. And that's harder to wrap your mind around. How does the God of the universe, the very Creator, live a human life? Okay. And that idea that God was both human and man is one of the things that sets Jesus apart from any other prophet, any other spiritual leader, any other wise person that we've revered in the past. That Jesus was both God and human. He experienced everything we did. Okay. We know that means that Jesus was hungry sometimes. Jesus probably slept funny and woke up with a crick in his neck. Jesus probably got diarrhea at some point. Okay, Jesus walked and probably got rocks in his sandals. Jesus experienced all the day-to-day things that make humans human, that make humanity such a shared experience. Jesus experienced that. Okay? He didn't have some kind of get out of jail free card that he could toss and be like, well, I'm God, so I'm going to be comfortable, right? We know that Jesus suffered, that Jesus experienced what we did. And that's such a hard concept to wrap your mind around, right? And I want to kind of dwell in that mystery for a moment, because I think it's okay that there are some things that we don't understand, right? I think it's okay to say the mystery of Jesus being both God and man is something that we don't have to fully be able to explain to ourselves or anybody else. The human mind can only handle so much. I'm going to go off for a minute. Is anybody here a Doctor Who fan? Besides Laura. So Doctor Who, if you don't know Doctor Who, and you should, it's a great show. British time travel, well, he's not British, but it's a British show with this time traveling alien who can regenerate. He spends a lot of time in modern day London, and he knows all the secrets of the universe. He's very smart, he's very quirky. He always travels for some reason with a human from modern day London to kind of keep him focused and grounded. And in one of the many complex storylines, his companion, Donna Noble, somehow also learns all the secrets of the universe. And her brain can't handle it. She's going to self-destruct. And they have to erase her memory and set her back to kind of her pre-factory settings and erase all of the character development that happened over several seasons. And it's a very sad moment. They managed to bring her back later, so it's okay. But that idea that we can only understand so much, I think, is a really important place to start when we're looking at some of the mysteries of God. Because it's so easy to get caught up in the, but what if, and why didn't we, and don't you know? And oftentimes, no, we don't. And that's okay. That's where faith is. That's where we start the journey. It's okay to not know. But we do know that Jesus was God. And we also know that Jesus was fully human. And Jesus existed as a human on earth, and Jesus experienced the things we experience. Should I stand to the right? Okay. Yeah. There we go. And one of the places we see Jesus talking about being human is this time we see, and this conversation is actually recorded in all four Gospels, but the religious leaders come to Jesus, and they're trying to test him. They're trying him out. And one of them asks, well, what's the greatest commandment? Kind of, you know, prove your knowledge here, right? And Jesus comes back with the greatest commandment in all the Bible, the commandment that supersedes everything else. Every law, every story, every history can be wrapped up into this idea of love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then he goes on to explain who our neighbor is. He tells a story of the Good Samaritan, that our neighbor is not the people who look just like us, who act like us, who talk like us, but our neighbors are the people who seem different. Our neighbors are the people who society tells us are our enemies, who culture tells us we shouldn't be friends with. Those are the people who are our neighbors who we have to love. Okay. But that's not where I'm going with the sermon, don't worry. Before that, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. And I think that's something we skip past a lot, that Jesus is calling us to also value who we are as people and take care of our own physical and emotional needs, which is a lot harder to do than to look outside of yourself and take care of other people, especially for those of us who might be people pleasers, who maybe were raised in this idea that you should always be caring for other people. And it's not to say you shouldn't be, but Jesus models for us throughout the Gospels how he took care of his humanity, how he took care of his emotions, how he made sure that he was healthy to minister to other people. Okay. So we're going to look at some self-care tips from Jesus today. Okay. And the first one, I'm going to focus on two things Jesus did in the Gospels where he stepped away from a situation, took care of his own needs. Okay. And the first one here, you can go ahead and, there we go, is very apropos because yesterday was Earth Day. So happy Earth Day, everybody. But Jesus spent time in the wilderness. Okay. Okay. And we've probably all heard the story of the time Jesus was in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. He was fasting. He was very hungry. The devil came and tempted him and said, "Hey, I'll give you bread." And he was like, "I am the bread of life." And the devil was like, "I'll give you kingdoms." And he was like, "I already have the universe." And, you know, there's this really interesting conversation there. But Jesus, eight other times throughout the Gospels, leaves a situation and goes to be in nature. He walks away from crowds of people who were surrounding him, wanting to hear him speak, wanting healing, wanting power, wanting recognition. And he had to step away and say, "No, I need to go get on a boat and go to the middle of a lake and be with my Father." He went up a mountain to say, "No, I need time to pray and time to commune with the Creator in creation, surrounded by the power of God." And you'll see here, I'm not going to go through and read all these verses, but these are different places, nine different places in the Bible where Jesus steps away. And you'll notice they're all times of high emotional intensity. Okay, right before Jesus feeds the 5,000, he's by himself on a mountaintop, and he comes back, and there's this huge crowd of people waiting for him. Okay? Several times when people are coming to him for healing, and he is with a crowd, then he'll step away and say, "No, I need time by myself." When he hears that John the Baptist has died, which John the Baptist not only was a prophet that came before Jesus that prepared the way, opened people's hearts and minds to the fact that Jesus was coming, he was also Jesus' cousin, or second cousin. Their moms were cousins, so whatever that ends up being. Okay, so this was family. This was a friend. This was somebody Jesus grew up with, who had ministered before him, who went out, who had baptized him, and he hears that Jesus, that John the Baptist is beheaded. A time of emotional intensity. Jesus steps away and goes into the wilderness to be with God. And it's not just Jesus. We see this throughout the Bible, okay? We saw David fleeing into the wilderness. We see Moses fleeing into the wilderness. We see Elijah fleeing into the wilderness and spending time with God. We see this as a place of refuge. And we see nature becomes a place where people can connect back to the Creator, back with who they are as people, center their emotions, speak with God, and come to a place of healing. And part of why I'm so passionate about this is my job. This is what I do. I connect people with nature. I love being outside. Being in the forest is my happy place. But what we see every day, yesterday I had 100 Girl Scouts out in the woods at my job. And they were doing nature hikes. They were playing games. They're rolling over logs and looking for insects and amphibians and just having a great time. And you see these girls who show up and they don't really say anything and they're kind of one with a pack, and you get them in the woods and suddenly they come alive. And now they are in their happy place. They are able to explore. And there's something very human about having a connection with nature. We are supposed to be connected with the natural world. We are supposed to be a part of this whole system of creation. But also, we are supposed to be healed by it. Okay, when God created the earth, he said six times it is good before he created humans. And then when he created humans, when humans arose, and God said, "This is your world. Take care of it. Watch over it. Be stewards of this land. This is a thing I'm giving to you." That's a slight paraphrase of Genesis. Okay. So God calls us to be one with his creation. And we see that a lot of times you'll hear in kind of Christian talk, the wilderness being used as an example of trials, of tribulation. I'm in my wilderness stage. I'm having a hard time emotionally. I'm in a drought. And I'd like to flip that language, to have wilderness be used as a healing phrase. I'm in the wilderness. I'm one with God. I'm stripped away of everything else that's distracting me. And I'm able to just focus on the Creator of all of this, the Creator of the universe and the Creator of the little fairy shrimp that swim in the vernal pond. Okay, and you're one with that. You're surrounded by the power of creation. And not only is this something we see throughout the Bible, but it's also a very cultural concept of getting into the wilderness. So John Moore, who's one of the founders of the modern conservation movement, you've probably seen this quote on like REI sweatshirts or something. But he says, "I go into the wilderness to lose my mind and find my soul." This idea that you're getting away from the distractions that keep us from focusing on what is really important, from who we are and what we need as people to be able to rest and recover. Okay. And it wouldn't be me if I'm not quoting John Denver. There are about 50 John Denver songs I could have quoted here, but there's a song he sings called "To the Wild Country," where he says, to the mountains, I can rest there. To the rivers, I will be strong. To the forests, I find peace there. To the wild country where I belong. This idea that you can find rest and peace while surrounded by creation and tuned with the Creator is so important for who we are as people. And I'm not saying that you have to go out and hike the Appalachian Trail. You don't have to go out and climb a mountain. You don't have to go and have some like into the wild experience where it's you and a backpack for 40 days. But anytime you're in nature, it's taking a walk in your local park, it's sitting under a tree and feeling the grass, is a time that you are connecting with the Creator of the universe. Okay. There was a really interesting study done by the Field Museum of Chicago about 15 years ago, where they were looking at the effects of nature on children. And they looked at two high-rise, low-income communities on the southeast side of Chicago, one of which was just a block, just an apartment block, surrounded by other concrete. And the other one, just a few blocks away, same demographics, same kids, they all went to the same school, but their apartment block was shaped as a square with a courtyard in the middle. And in that courtyard, there were two big oak trees. And there was a little grassy patch, and the kids would go and play and sit under the oak trees. And they did a study comparing the literacy rates of these two apartment blocks. And they found that as much as they can control all the other variables, the apartment block where the kids had access to even the tiniest bit of nature, they performed better in math and literacy. They had lower rates of ADHD and depression and anxiety. That being a part of nature, even in that tiny bit, helped them to connect to who they were as people and to be able to be more grounded. As I left the Field Museum, they were working on a grant to do more studies, and I honestly haven't followed it since then. So it would be interesting to complete that research. But we know that Jesus valued creation. Jesus went into the wilderness when he needed to heal. Jesus noticed the times that he was emotionally compromised, that he was overwhelmed by grief, overwhelmed by the needs of the people around him, surrounded by the very people he was ministering to, but needed a moment. He would go into nature. He would step away and be with God and talk to God and be a part of his creation in a way that was healing and humanizing and centering and would bring him peace so that he could go back and continue healing and teaching and preaching and ministering. Okay. So self-care tip from Jesus number one, spend time outside, be in nature, be surrounded by creation, and not just in a flippant way, but in a way where you're saying, while I'm here, I am with the Creator of the entire universe. And how mind-blowing is that? So I have a line here where it just says, joy is found in nature, and that's all I wrote. But it's true. You're going to find joy in nature. You're also going to find this peace and healing that Jesus experienced when he stepped away as well. Another thing about Jesus is that he was a creator, right? And Josh, you can go to the next slide. And not only did he create the universe, one with God in the beginning, but Jesus was born into a family of carpenters. His earthly father, Joseph, was a carpenter. We are not told otherwise in the scriptures, so I think it's safe to assume that Jesus was taught carpentry skills as he was growing up. In that society, oftentimes the oldest son would follow the footsteps of the father, taking over the family business from generation to generation. So you can also assume that Jesus was born into a family with a long line of being carpenters, being craftsmen, being creators. And while I go on, George, do you mind coming up here for a sec? There's a box of pipe cleaners there. Can you go around and hand like 2 to 3 pipe cleaners to everybody? They can pick favorite colors if they want. Okay, thank you. So we see that Jesus is coming from a line of craftsmen. And there's a picture here of a rocking chair. And I'm going to have a little wife brag moment, but my husband made that rocking chair. And he also made this table. It's a little other wife brag moment. It's gorgeous. That is a stunning rocking chair. There's a few dings in it now because we have small children. But this rocking chair was a feat of 3 years of work. And that's not the only chair that was built during this time. There were probably 3 or 4 other chairs built in the process as Braden developed the prototype that he wanted, worked out the shapes, figured out exactly how he wanted the wood to go together, practiced with the different types of woods together until he finally made the final product. Now, we also had a baby during that time, so and he was working full time, so 3 years is probably a long time to build a rocking chair. But this was a long process that resulted in beautiful craftsmanship, hours of sanding and work and carving. And in that process, and Braden, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was very cathartic. Braden was working with his hands while his mind worked through problems, while his emotions worked through what was going on in his life. Okay. And we know, because we're told in Genesis, that we are made in the image of God. And one of the things about God is that he's creative. God created. God created the universe. Jesus was there with God at the creation of time. We are made to be creative people. We are made to bring new things into the world. We are made to bring beauty into the world. We are made to work with our hands. And when I say working with our hands, I don't mean that we are all achieving that level of artistry and craftsmanship, because some of us struggle with stick figures. So I don't necessarily mean that we're all going to be master carpenters. But I do think it's important to take time to do things where you are working with your body and working with your hands. And we see Jesus doing this as well in the Gospels. Not just the fact that he grew up a carpenter, we would assume, but we see him actually stepping away in the Bible to do something with his hands. So Josh, you can go to the next slide. There's this crazy story in the Gospels. And this is also in all 4, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, all tell this story. But John is the only one that adds this detail. Okay? So John is talking about Jesus going to the temple in Jerusalem. And he says, when it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove them from the temple courts. Tossing over tables, yelling at people, getting rid of the livestock, which if you've been around livestock, you know they make a big mess. Imagine livestock in the court of a temple that's supposed to be a holy place. So Jesus, whenever I've heard this passage my entire life, it's always been about righteous anger. How Jesus was angry on behalf of God. He was angry on behalf of the poor that were being taken advantage of by the money changers. He was angry on the behalf of this idea of sacred spaces, his father's sacred space, being desecrated by people trying to make money off of the system, right? And all of that is true, and it's okay to be righteously angry. But John is the only one that includes this detail that Jesus went away and he made a whip before he went back. I've never made a whip. I looked at a few YouTube videos of people making whips. I don't know if they're all the same kind of whip Jesus made, but it's not an easy process, right? He had to go source materials. He had to find leather. It had to be the right kind of leather, cut to the right lengths. He had to braid it in a specific way. Maybe it had a handle, maybe it didn't. We don't really know much about this whip. But all of that to say is that that's a process. Then this moment of righteous anger, of deep emotion, where Jesus rightfully was clearing this heresy out of his father's house, he paused, he stepped away, and he created. He spent time in the creation process. Now, he made a whip. It's not like he went and macramed a wall hanging, but he created something, the right tool for the right job, before he went back. And I can imagine, those of you that have the pipe cleaners in your hands, it's impossible to hold them without doing something with them, right? Yep. Our hands want to move. Our hands want to braid or twist or create. And when you're doing something with your body that's creating a new thing, your mind and your emotions are processing through what is happening in a way that is much more focused than if you're just angry and reacting. So both of these situations, going into the wilderness, doing something with our hands, is this deep connection to our physical world, our physical selves, okay? The very nature of what makes human humanity is this interaction with the world and our emotions together. And Jesus took the time to say, I'm not going to just flip the tables. I'm going to step away. I'm going to create something. I'm going to get into that space where my mind and my body are all working through these emotions. And then he goes back in and he flips the tables and drives people out with a whip, right? So the end is still the same. He still had the same end product of clearing the temple. But you know that it wasn't in this moment of hot-headed rage. You know it was with the clarity of mind that comes from sitting and creating something new, okay? So Jesus was a creator. Jesus spent time in creation. Jesus took these moments of extreme emotion and he used his physical body as a human, going into the world, making something with his hands to process through those emotions. And I think that's really important because we're told a lot that we need to control our emotions. We're told that we shouldn't be angry about things. Christians should always show love. Christians should always be nice. Christians should be kind. And all of those things are true, but it doesn't mean we're not going to have moments where we are grieving, where we are angry, where we are hurt, where we are confused, where we don't know what's happening in the world and we don't know what to do with it. We're in despair. And Jesus shows us ways to take that and process those emotions and still feel them fully. Jesus still walked away from those crowds and said, I need to go spend time with God. I need to be outside in creation. Jesus had a lot of people following him with a lot of money, mostly women supporting his ministry. He could have gone to Susanna, who was the steward of Herod's household, and said, can you clear this house for me to go sit and have a little prayer closet and spend time with God? And that could have happened. And maybe he did at some point. It's not in the Bible. But what we see is that he walked away to be in creation. That was the space to connect with God. We see that he used that process of creating, making a whip in a moment of anger to process his emotions. So it's okay to be mad. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to be anxious. It's okay to wrestle with uncertainty and doubt. One of the times Jesus walks away and spends time in the mountain is in the very last days of his pre-resurrected life, when he's wrestling with the fact that he knows his death and resurrection are coming. He knows he's not going to enjoy it. He's very uncertain. He's calling out to God saying, please, if there's any other way, take this away from me. It's okay to wrestle with those moments of doubt. But what we see over and over again in the life of Jesus, the only person who's ever been both God and human at the same time, is that that wrestling with emotion was always done in the presence of God. And where he found the presence of God was in the wilderness, was on the mountaintop, was on a boat in the middle of the lake, was out in a desert. I would say if Jesus was in New England, he would have been in a forest. He would have been walking through a field. He would have been scrambling up a rock field. Right, Johnny? Getting to the top of a mountain. And in those moments, he would have been connecting not only with his own humanity and the emotions that he's feeling, but with the very creator of the universe. So my question to you today is, when was the last time you were fully human? When was the last time you let yourself commune with God, be surrounded by creation, creating something of your hands, reflecting that power of God? When was the last time you let yourself process what you were feeling in the presence of God? When was the last time you walked into the wilderness? When was the last time you braided a whip? And as we end, Josh, I'm going to have you go to the last slide here. There's a couple verses from Psalms that talk about these two aspects of, may your favor be upon me and on the work of my hands. This idea of the work of your hands, reflecting the fact that we are made in God's image as creative people. As God creates, we create. And this idea of going into the wilderness. And I want you guys to spend a moment looking at these verses. Use these as a prayer as you braid your pipe cleaners together, or think about a time that you've processed. Think about the emotions you have in you right now that you need to process. We're going to take a moment and reflect on those. I'm going to have Phil come up and do some keys. May the work of my hands be blessed and be a blessing. The work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place. What is man that you are mindful of him? And the Son of Man that you care for him? Who are we that God meets us in the wilderness and cares about the things in our hearts? Who are we that God blesses the work of our hands and brings us into a place where he is with us, with our emotions? Who are we that the very God of the universe took a human form to walk among us and show us what it means to be fully human?